We just sang the song, Take Time to Be Holy. I'm not sure what the writer intended by that, nor do I know what you think about when you sing that song. I've thought about that song, and the idea of being holy is not simply when I pray or when I read the Bible, those kind of things as that song talks about. I think of that song this way. Take time to do the things that will help make us holy. Holy means separated, set apart for God. And there are a number of things in that song that talks about activities that we can engage in, prayer, Bible study, and so forth, that will help make us holy. And one of the things we sang in that song was, make friends with God's children. And if indeed that is the sentiment that is meant, or at least that you meant when you sang the song, this verse we're going to read fits in with that so very perfectly. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this, some have entertained angels without knowing it. So here is clearly an admonition to hospitality. But what is meant when it says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers? What does that mean? I've got a definition on the slide from American Heritage Dictionary on the word hospitality that pretty well captures the idea of an attitude toward others, toward guests or toward others. Cordial and generous reception or disposition toward guests. That's a basic concept that seems to fit very well. Hospitality is not just having somebody in your home or eating a meal with someone, but has to do with an attitude toward people. Sometimes people go to church. Their name is in the directory. They're on the pew. But oftentimes, they're very aloof. They have little to do with others, maybe except in their little circle. They'll talk to the person sitting right there and the person sitting right there, maybe the person behind them. That's about it. And they've got their little circle, their little group. But as far as interacting with the people across the aisle or talking to other people as we're dismissing or when we come together, very little of that. And oftentimes very little contact or interactivity apart from our meeting place. And if I understand the concept of hospitality, it would encourage more interaction, more making friends with God's children, more service toward one another. We'll be looking at some verses along that very line. Now, does hospitality mean that you have to provide lodging for somebody, that you have to give them a bedroom to sleep in at night, that you have to provide supper for them and breakfast in the morning? Is that what's involved in hospitality? Sometimes the word hospitality, in fact, several times in the scriptures when you find that word used, and we're looking at scriptures that actually use two families of words, but they're related. Both of those families are in Hebrews 13:2. So I know they're related. But so many times the verses are talking about the idea of providing lodging, giving someone a place to stay. We'll read a verse or two later along that line. Right now, I want you to look back at two chapters, however. You notice in Hebrews 13:2, it says, do not neglect to show hospitality, for some, by this, some have entertained angels without knowing it. It seems to be a reference back to Genesis chapter 18 and possibly chapter 19. So turn back to Genesis chapter 18. And chapter 19 with me for just a moment. Now, the reason we want to turn back there is because on this question of lodging, if you look in Genesis chapter 19 about Lot, it says two angels came to Sodom, and then Lot, it says, when Lot saw them, he arose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground, and he said, now, behold, my lords, please turn aside to your servant's house. There's no indication that Lot knew they were angels. Moses is writing this later, of course. Angels don't necessarily have wings, and they don't have a little glow above their head. Apparently these men, this follows from chapter 18, you'll see this in a minute, that they just look like men, but they were special beings. And they came to Lot, and here you notice that Lot said to these men, verse 2, please, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night, wash your feet. You may rise early and go on your way. And so verse 3, he urged them strongly, and they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he prepared a feast for them. So maybe that's the idea we generally associate with hospitality, providing a lodging for someone. And that's a very good practice, and we'll talk some more about that a little bit later in our lesson. But look at chapter 18. Maybe this is the most connected passage oftentimes with Hebrews chapter 13 when it says some have entertained angels unawares. But what you have in chapter 18, verse 1, now the Lord, and that's an interesting statement, by the way, as you read through it, the Lord, capital L-O-R-D, appeared to Abraham as he sat sitting in his tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. When you get to chapter 19, one wasn't there. It's the other two. So it's the Lord and these other two. But nevertheless, he says, three men, notice it says, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. He said, and then, of course, he invited them to wash their feet. That was a very common practice of hospitality and greeting in that particular day as they walked the roads with sandals and their feet were dusty and tired. So he offered some water to wash their feet, and he offered, verse 5, to feed them. Now what's interesting is in verse 4. He said, please let a little water be brought, wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. Under the tree. Nothing said about, at this point, bringing them into his tent. And so, verse 6, he went into Sarah and said, prepare this food. And so she did. And so Abraham was involved in it, verse 7. But when you get to verse 8, he took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them. And he was standing by them under the tree as they ate. Unless I missed it somewhere, there's nothing in chapter 18 about providing lodging, about come in and spend the night. But he had a gracious disposition, a desire to serve. There was no standoffness. There was no aloofness. There was an attitude of wanting to serve these men and providing, in this case, a meal. So does the word hospitality necessitate actually having someone in your house? I know the word is used that way over and over again in the Scriptures. When I was restudying this topic for this lesson, somebody asked me to preach on hospitality. I don't remember who it was. But I was restudying this, and I looked at this again. And so I'm not sure that it necessitates that. However, that is a great way to practice hospitality. And we'll talk some more about the benefits of that in just a moment. But what about somebody that's single, living at home with their parents, and maybe their parents are not open to hospitality? What about a woman living with a man who's not a Christian, or vice versa, man living with a wife who doesn't want to have people in their homes? Maybe they can't have people in, but they can still be gracious. They can still have this attitude. Maybe they could meet them at a restaurant. Maybe they could provide a meal. Maybe it would be an opportunity to make friends with God's children. Anyway, that's something for you to think about as we think about what just exactly this hospitality is. And it's not just the act itself, but it's an attitude toward others. Now, we ask the question here, is it just for strangers? You know what he says in the verse, hospitality to strangers. Actually, those three words are actually the translation of one word. And that one word means the love of strangers. And so when we read that, we may think, well, showing this attitude of wanting to provide or be with or intermingle with someone that we know and are familiar with doesn't fall under that category. And certainly the word does include strangers. You see that in the references there in Genesis 18 and 19. that these were men neither Abraham nor Lot knew, and it would certainly include that. But look at Philemon in verse 22. Look at Philemon verse 22. In Philemon in verse 22, you remember that Paul wrote this from prison and expects to be released. He said, at the same time also prepare me a lodging. I know the word hospitality doesn't occur in this verse, but it is that concept. It's that akin family of words that we find in, combined with it in Hebrews chapter 2. Entertain men unawares. That's this family of words. And so he says, prepare me a lodging, for I hope that through your prayers I'll be given to you. Philemon was well known to Paul. They were evidently dear friends, and Paul had a great respect for Philemon and vice versa. But you can see Philemon extending hospitality, not to a stranger in the sense that we talk about, somebody that I don't know, somebody he knew and loved and appreciated and had such a gracious attitude to want to help Paul. So I would not stress, if I were you, the idea of stranger, somebody you don't know, in the concept of hospitality. Well, does it only apply to traveling brethren? It does sometimes apply to brethren who are traveling and need a place to stay. Evidently, in the first century, they didn't have the good hotels that we have today. And when brethren would travel, especially in preaching the gospel, there were not the accommodation readily available like we have them today. And so hospitality became a very important thing. In Acts chapter 21 and verse 16, it's just one of several references you can find where indeed brethren who traveled were receiving good attitudes from other brethren to want to help them in their travels. Verse 16, some of the disciples from Caesarea also came with us. Note verse 15, they're on their way to Jerusalem. And so they're on a journey, and it says, some of the disciples from Caesarea also came with us, taking us to Manson of Cyprus, a disciple of long standing with whom we were to lodge. So they traveled to Jerusalem here with the disciples, said, I've got a place you could stay. Certainly you would think it'd maybe provide them food as well. So they were traveling and needed a place to stay on their journey to Jerusalem, and that is something that you find. But look at Romans chapter 16, verse 23. Romans chapter 16 and verse 23. Now here's a little different circumstance, and we have this concept. Gaius, host, that word host is in our family of words, host to me and to the whole church greets you. Now here's this act that we're talking about, hospitality, but it's not the traveling brethren, it's the church meets there. Maybe they met there a couple times a week, certainly on the first day of the week. And so it's not necessarily people who are going from Rome to Jerusalem or vice versa, but rather the people who live there locally. And that's something to think about when we think about hospitality, that what about the people right here in this congregation? What about the people that live right here in your community that are members of the body of Christ? And it seems that this text points to Gaius as being a very hospitable person, possibly a man of wealth or means, and using his wealth to host the church. It's interesting in 1 Peter 4, look over 1 Peter chapter 4, and we're going to look at this verse a little bit more in a little different light in just a moment. But look at 1 Peter 4, 9. The reason I wanted to use this verse here is because of the one another. Be hospitable to one another. And so these are people that are all struggling in a world of difficulty, and this is a one another context. And so as you know the persons that are here today, different ones have different issues. Maybe it's health issues. Maybe it's problems in their family. Maybe it's maybe they're young in the faith. Maybe they're older in the faith. Whatever. Here's your one another opportunity. And so this, you'd have much more opportunity to have the one another service with people you know and you interact with from week to week than you would somebody just traveling through. So anyway, that's something to think about. Okay, let's turn our attention to another part of our study. And what is the value of hospitality? Turn to 3 John. 3 John verses 5 through 8. 3 John verse 5. Beloved, you see this is written to Gaius. He said, Beloved, you're acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. They have testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God, for they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with the truth. By Gaius practicing hospitality with traveling teachers and preachers, he was actually sharing in the support of the gospel. He was having fellowship in that. It may not be exactly on the, well, it is, and on the same scale. But there is some similarity when we have a man here in a gospel meeting, and the brethren here will open their homes or take a man out to eat. He's here to preach, to do his work. Maybe he has his wife, maybe he has his family. And brethren will be out some expense and some time with that man. This is not just a buddy-buddy thing. He's here to do the work of the Lord. And I don't know if you think of it this way, but there's a sense in which you're sharing in the work that man's doing and trying to teach and preach the gospel of Christ. That's a good thing. That's one of the values of hospitality. Look at Acts chapter 28, verse 23. And we talked about using your home when you can. Not everybody can because of their mate, because of other circumstances, but when you can use your home. It can be. Hospitality can be a tremendous avenue for teaching the gospel. Now, Paul was away from home. He was in prison, but they had given him a place to live, evidently. And he made the best use of that. In Acts 28:23, when they had set a day for Paul, they came to him at his lodging in large numbers. And he was explaining to them by solemnly testifying about the kingdom of God and trying to persuade them concerning Jesus, both from the law of Moses and from the prophets from morning till evening. There are, when I was in Oklahoma, for example, preaching there. There was a man and his wife. If we had visitors, you can just be sure they're either going to take them home or take them out. And many times they'd take them home and feed them. And the conversation would turn to religious topics. And I don't know how many people were instructed in the truth that they needed to learn at that time, because some of these young people were people from a college that was near there that supported institutional practices. And they were introduced to another concept when they would come there. And this man and his wife use their home to that end, and others do the same thing. So you might think about that. You say, where am I going to meet people? When am I going to talk to people? What about across your kitchen table? What about in your living room or dining room? Having somebody over and talk to them. You see somebody discouraged, somebody needs teaching, whatever it may be. Maybe learning from them. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But certainly hospitality can provide an avenue for teaching the gospel of Christ. In 1 Peter chapter 4, now I do want to go back to that passage I referred to a while ago, because now I want to look at it from the idea of serving brethren. When you read 1 Peter, what you see is that these people were living in an ungodly world, and they were facing all that goes with that. When you get back in chapter 2, you talk about living under a worldly government and all that's involved in that. In chapter 2, at the end of the chapter, it talks about slaves with bad masters, cruel masters, and how they were to live in view of that. And then in chapter 3, verse 1, he talks about women living with men who aren't Christians. Those kind of circumstances. Then later he just talks about living in an ungodly world. He talks about that in chapter 4, about all the temptations that surround you. And you know, when people are facing these things, maybe from a mate, maybe from their family, maybe from their employer or their job, there's struggles, there's battles that go on. What are we going to do? What can we do? Well, we can serve one another. How can we serve one another? Look at verse 8. Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employed in serving one another as stewards of the manifold grace of God. And then he talks about some of the different things that people can do. And maybe there's some things you can't do, but maybe you can make friends with God's children and share their burdens and listen to their problems and be a shoulder to lean on. It's a way. As we struggle together in a world of ungodliness, to help one another, to use the facilities and the means that God has given you to serve people and help them go to heaven. And then, hospitality can serve the tremendous benefit of being served. Look at Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. Here in Romans chapter 1, you know that the Apostle Paul highly valued the faith of other Christians. He talks about here the benefit that he derived from the faith of other Christians. Look at verse 12. He wanted to see them. You see that in verse 11. He wanted to be with them. And look at the reason he gives, verse 12. That I may be encouraged. Paul, that you can encourage Paul. That's right. But he's an apostle and he's so knowledgeable and he's so dedicated. Yes, but he said, I can be encouraged if I can be with you. Look, together with you while among you, each of us by the other's faith, both yours and mine. You know, we've talked about hospitality as a means to serve others, as a means to teach. But I'll tell you what, there's some benefit in having good and godly people in your home. Going to sit down and eat with good and godly people. Seeing their faith and hearing their devotion. Seeing the language that they use as they try to live holy lives. Seeing the choices they make as they try to put God first. Maybe you don't know about those things, but you can be benefited by that. I know over the years, as my children were growing up, and we'd have a gospel meeting, Oklahoma, Highlands, and then later here, I wanted the preacher to stay in my home. I wanted him to. My children, those were precious times. They got to be around godly, good men. And to get to know them and to get to love them. Do your children know any other gospel preachers? Are they ever around them? Are the only people they know those folks that sit right there on around the pew around you? Is that all they know? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could teach our children that not only here, but when they move off somewhere, they become a part of another congregation and make it their goal. I'm going to try to know everybody in this congregation. And get to be a part of this group, not just have my name on the roll. There's a benefit to be derived, Paul said, both ways. You might not think of it that way, but that's what he said. Look at Philemon. Now this letter is written from prison. Paul's in prison as he writes to Philemon. And look what he says here in verses 6 and 7. He said, I pray that the fellowship, you know what fellowship means, sharing. The fellowship of your faith may become effective. How? Through the knowledge of every good thing which is in you for Christ's sake. If we don't know one another, are we robbing others and are we being robbed of the benefit that can be derived from that? Look at the next verse. For I have come to have much joy and comfort in your love because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you, brother. Paul's a long way off. But just knowing about Philemon and knowing how he has impacted others is a sunshine in a cloudy prison. It's a sense of joy. It's a sense of encouragement. And so while hospitality serves the purpose of serving others, it is indeed a means to be served. Well, turn to 1 Corinthians 7. Let's turn our attention now to some problems with trying to practice hospitality. It's all fine and good. We understand that God wants us to, and there's certain benefits to be derived. Anything God tells us to do is for our good. But there are problems. 1 Corinthians 7, alludes to one of the problems that one might encounter when you say, I do want to practice hospitality. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 12, he said, if anyone has, any brother has a wife who's an unbeliever. Now what? Maybe his wife said, don't bring those Christians over here. I'm not about to cook meal for them, and I don't want to have to clean up after them. Now what do you do? Well, that does present a real problem, doesn't it? It does. I do want to say this about that. While the Bible encourages hospitality, we're only responsible for what we can do. And those who can't practice hospitality in that way because of an unbelieving mate should not feel bad about it. Obviously, God doesn't demand we force our mates either to be believers or to practice these duties that a conscientious Christian will practice. And so that is a problem, but and it may stand in the way of some. I will say this. It is sad, however, when a person has a mate who is a believer, or he claims to be, and doesn't want to practice hospitality. Why is that? And that does present something that seems rather paradoxical, doesn't it? 1 Timothy chapter 5, it's interesting to me that the church at Ephesus, Paul writing to Timothy, the preacher in the church at Ephesus, and he's talking about women, he said, that are to be put on the list, verse 9. Whatever that means, I think that's another discussion. I think probably it means women that were put on the list by the church to serve in a certain capacity and probably supported to do so. But be that as it may, whatever you think it may mean, he talks about a woman of a certain character that was to be considered for whatever he's talking about. And you'll note he talks about in verse 10, she has a reputation for good works if she's brought up children. Now, maybe the reputation for good works is the generic and all these others are specifics of that, possibly. What kind of good works? She's brought up children. She's shown hospitality to strangers. What? She's shown hospitality to strangers. She's washed the saints' feet, which was a customary way of showing hospitality, is the idea. So here's a woman that's going to be put on the list, and I think probably particular kind of services that a woman can perform, but it's got to be this kind of woman that doesn't mind serving, that has that spirit of humility and that spirit of love and that spirit of self-sacrifice. So why would not a godly woman want to practice the kind of things that we read here that are so commended? Am I missing something? Would this not be a goal to strive for? You know, it's interesting in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4, it says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. The crown of her husband. She's an honor to him. She's a benefit. She's an advantage. She's a plus in his life. And over in chapter 31, where it talks about this woman whose price is far above rubies, the excellent wife that's there described. In chapter 31, verse 23, it says, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. If I understand the context, the reason that man is known and respected in these public circles, because of his wife. She's clothed him with dignity and honor. The idea. And so it's all about the woman, not about the man. But yet her husband is known because of the kind of woman she is. And then you get down to verse 27. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Not talking about working in the garden. it's providing the things that are good for her husband and good for her children. Read the context. You'll see that. She has her family's welfare at heart. And yes, hospitality involves some work. I mean, it doesn't have to be a full-blown meal to have somebody in. You can have a cup of coffee and go buy some cookies somewhere. Or you can take somebody out for a meal if that's better. And maybe it does involve a little expense and some work, but the benefits and this kind of character is commended by the Scriptures. But that's a problem. Wives sometimes. Well, it's not just wives, it's husbands. As sure as verse 12 talks about wives that are unbelievers, verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 7 talks about husbands that are unbelievers. And in 1 Peter chapter 3, it talks about a woman married to a man who's not obedient. And she's still to respect him and still to submit to him. And so that does present a barrier. Some women just can't because of their mates. But the beautiful thing is, folks, God knows that. God knows that. He doesn't expect more than what you're able to do. Shame on the husband who's supposed to be a Christian, however, who doesn't encourage his wife when she wants to practice hospitality. Well, there's another problem sometimes in hospitality, and that's the children. Over in Proverbs chapter 29, you say, what are you talking about, the children? In Oklahoma, I lived there. There was a family, and they were friends of ours. They were good people. But they'd come over to visit. And in the early times of their visiting, of course, we didn't know them that well at first. You know, their kids would come over. Next thing you know, the little boy in his cowboy boots would be walking across the coffee table. And all kind of stuff. Well, the mama didn't say anything. So Pat got to where she'd correct the kids. And that was okay with them. That was okay with them. But if we want people to be hospitable to us, and if we want to practice hospitality to others as parents, this doesn't just apply to hospitality, but it will affect hospitality, is that parents need to take control of their children. This verse, you know this verse, 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. I've been in people's homes in meetings. I've been in a gospel meeting, go to visit somebody. You're trying to sit on the couch. You're trying to talk to the parents. The kids are up in your face, all over the couch, in your lap. You can't visit with folks that way. Why don't the parents do something about that? And vice versa, if it's your home. And so, either way it works, whether you're in their home or they're in your home, don't let your children just do what they want to do. You be the parent. You provide the guidance. You provide the control. Verse 17, correct your son, he'll give you comfort, and he'll give delight to your soul. People won't mind you coming to their house. Bring your children over. Years ago, there was a gospel preacher, a renowned gospel preacher, known widely in the brotherhood, and it was also kind of associated with, he didn't like children. A lot of meetings. Didn't like children. And he went to stay with some people in a gospel meeting. He had some children. And within a few days, he had the children sitting on his lap, and he just loved them. What's the difference? I know why he didn't like some children. Yeah, I can understand that. And so hospitality involves parents doing what parents are to do. Now look over at Exodus chapter 21. So what has this got to do with hospitality? Let me see if I can explain what I think it has to do with it at least. Under the Israelite law that God had for the nation, if I understand this particular text, Israelites were held responsible for the damage to their neighbor's property when they were just negligent, when they knew there was potential harm and danger and they did nothing about it. Look, read with me. If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall surely be stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall go, unpunished. If, however, an ox was previously in the habit of goring, and its owner had been warned, yet he does nothing to confine it, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned. Listen to this. And its owner shall be put to death? They warned you of the danger to others. Down in verse 33, if a man opens a pit or digs a pit and does not cover it over, and an ox or donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. He'll give money to the owner, and the dead animal shall become his. And you can read the rest of it. The point is, you can't just act irresponsibly. And you can't let your children act irresponsibly. You can't just let your children go to somebody's house and mark on the walls and go in the bedrooms and fool with stuff that doesn't belong to them. Of course, we should have taught them that at home. I've been in people's houses where everything is 3 foot high. Teach the children, that doesn't belong to you. Leave it alone. What's wrong with that? And I can see why some people do not want to accept invitations to hospitality and certainly don't want to have some families in their home because the children are rambunctious. Now look, you say, well, my children aren't perfect. You show me a family that has perfect kids. And you say, after that, you saying all this, I sure don't want to have anybody in the home or go to... No, that's not the point. Those of us who've had children, we know that our children can surprise even us. And they're going to be patient with good parents who are trying to do what they can. This is not to discourage parents. It's to encourage parents to keep being good parents. And people will know when you do that. In spite of that, your children will disappoint you. They'll surprise you. They'll shock you sometimes. But you're making an effort to be conscious of other people and the impact of conduct upon that. Then another barrier sometimes is money. Having the money, for example, to have someone in or take someone out, or maybe you don't think your house is very nice. You know, over in James chapter 2, evidently among the brethren James wrote to, there was different economic levels. And, you know, by the way, just a side point, it's interesting, that was all through the New Testament. You never find rules that say everybody has to live on the same economic level. Isn't that interesting? You don't find that. He talked to the rich about how to treat their riches. He talked to the poor about their poverty. But here we have in chapter 2:1, he warns these people who have faith in the Lord Jesus Christ with this favoritism toward those who wear nice clothes and, I guess, drive nice chariots and wear big rings and all of that. When it comes to one's faith, that should not make any difference about faith. And that's the picture. Verse 2, if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, there comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who's wearing the fine clothes and say, sit here in a good place, etc. Now, that doesn't apply to every situation in life. If you're a banker, that does make a difference. What guy comes in, whether he's got any money or not. He says, I'd like to borrow $100,000. You say, you own anything? You don't own anything. I just want to borrow money. Well, you're prejudiced. You loan that other guy money. Well, yeah, you're prejudiced. Nothing wrong with that. That's not what this is talking about. When it comes to the faith of Christ that we share in common, riches really immaterial. Wouldn't that apply to hospitality? It doesn't make any difference if a fellow drives an old beat-up car or drives a Cadillac. What difference does it make? And unfortunately, sometimes the prejudice is reverse prejudice. People who don't have the big house and the big car feel bad towards the people who do. That's wrong. That's just as wrong as the rich people looking down on the people who don't. And so in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good and to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future. You read James 5, you'll see these rich people who are selfish. But here is an admonition. Timothy, you teach the rich people in the church at Ephesus to share, to want to help others. And maybe hospitality would be a way to do that. If people feel bad at you because your house is humble, you don't have the kind of house they do, you know who's got the problem? They do. And if people feel bad at you because you're on an economic plane to afford a real fine house in a beautiful place, and they feel bad at you about that, you know who's got the problem? They do. So don't let that intimidate you. And then finally, look at Luke 14. Luke 14:12. He also went on to say to one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends or brothers or relatives or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. So that do not have means to repay you, you'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Nobody's invited me over, so... When's the last time they had me in their house? What difference does it make? You do it because you love the Lord. You do it because you trust His counsel. You do it because you want to serve. Not a reciprocal thing. Look back at Luke chapter 6. This text is talking about love and what it demands and how to act. Luke chapter 6, 35, says, love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. It's not a matter of, if they had me over for donuts, I'll have them over for donuts. If they had me over for steak, I'll have them over for steak. It's not that kind of thing. Not a reciprocal thing. So, we started out with a verse that said, do not neglect to show hospitality. Now what we can do, we can make excuses. Here's one, here's two, here's three, here's my case. Or we can say, you know, I need to do this. And I'm going to start trying to find ways I do practice what God told me to do. Something to think about as we make friends with God's people, as we strive to serve and interact with one another.